May the 4th meeting of KUA, and please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Now we move to approval of today's agenda. Can I have a motion to approve today's agenda, please?
So moved.
Second.
Anyone in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Anyone against it, nay. Hearing no nays, it's approved. We're moving on to awards and presentations.
Yes, Madam
Brian, please.
Chair, we've got several this this afternoon. The first is American Public Power Association Award that KUA received for 2021. And here to tell us a little bit about that is Tiffany Henderson, Director of Corporate Communications.
Good afternoon. The American Public Power Association Certificate of Excellence in Reliability recognizes utilities with reliability statistics in the top 25% of the nation. The award is based on KUA's previous 5 years of average SAIDI as compared to the national utility reliability data collected by the Energy Information Administration. And so based on that data from 2016 to 2020, KUA's reliability was in the top 25% of the utilities in the country, thereby qualifying KUA to receive this certificate for 2021.
Very good, thank you.
Just a note on that, 25% across board at the national level, but we're even lower at the state level. We're even doing even better, so just a reflection of who we are.
That's right. Very proud of you, KUA. Thank you.
All right, Madam Chair, would you join me?
Sure.
Okay. Our next, not here for me somewhere. The first award tonight is a degree recognition that we want to recognize Ritz Kang. Come on up here. He is a collections analyst in our customer service department. Just received her master's in business administration. And also currently our EEOC president for about another week. Next award is a 10-year service award for Michelle Daughtry. Come on up here. She's a library in our operating department. Thank you for 10 years of service to KUA. You'll have to forgive me. We missed the 5-year service award for Ryan McNeil, a senior instrument control and electrical technician out of Kane Island. He's not able to be here today, but let's let him know our appreciation. Okay, then Mr. Willie Simmons, come on up here. You're our newest line crew supervisor, right?
Second
newest in our operations department, recognizing him for 15 years of service to the KUA. Next, Mr. John Ambrosi, come on up here. In our operations department, 25 years of service.
Wow. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. out at Kane Island, E&I supervisor, isn't able to be here, but we're going to recognize him for 25 years of service.
Thank goodness.
And our employee of the month for May 2022 is Marilyn Carl, our lead cashier in our customer service department. She's not able to be here today, but we'll make sure that her department recognizes her, and I'll be here later on. So
I'll get her day off.
You'll get her day off? But let's let her know our appreciation.
Hi, neighbor.
Hello, hello.
Okay, so I guess now we're going to hear the audience. Is there anyone here who wishes to address the board? Seeing no one, we move on to consent agenda. Do I have a motion to approve last month's agenda and three items?
So moved.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Anyone against to say nay? Hearing no nays, the motion is approved. Go on to public hearing. There is none. Informational presentations.
Yes, Madam Chair. There are two informational presentations this afternoon. The first, we've got a recipient from Helping Hand Community Counseling who is a recipient of KUA sponsorship dollars. And here to tell us a little bit about that organization is Tiffany Henderson.
Good afternoon again. We have with us today Kira Takkinen. She is the Executive Director of Helping Hand Community Counseling, and joining her today is Bobby Bryant, one of their board members. Helping Hand Community Counseling is dedicated to providing free and low-cost counseling services to those who are not able to afford counseling and psychotherapy services. The organization received $500 in sponsorship funds from KUA in this current budget year, and this is their first time receiving funds from KUA. And now I will turn it over to Kira.
Thank you. Thank you. As Tiffany mentioned, my name is Kira Takkinen. I am the Executive Director of Helping Hand Community Counseling. We currently have our primary office in St. Cloud, and we are very excited to announce that we are opening our second location here in Kissimmee, and that is through a partnership with the Hope Partnership, and that is going to be at their new location, the Hope Commons, which is right downtown Kissimmee, right down the street from City Hall. And through these services, we, as Tiffany mentioned, we offer free psychotherapy, crisis counseling, individual counseling, families, and children as well. This service initially began as a philanthropic arm of our for-profit parent company, A Helping Hand Counseling Center. To this day, we still support the nonprofit, and the nonprofit utilizes space for the nonprofit, and we continue to provide those services to a plethora of different situations that come before us. Initially, we started as a family wraparound service for the Medicaid clients that we were seeing who had family members who did not have services. And that allowed us to really provide more of a family system structure. Now we see everything from homeless families and individuals all the way up to just sort of your everyday middle-income family who either, A, can't afford their co-pays, have lost their insurance and can't afford services at all, or one of the other situations that we've been seeing most recently is families who have experienced a severe crisis within the family and need a multitude of services and therefore can't afford that concentrated amount of service in a short period of time, and so the nonprofit is able to step in and provide those services as well. This is our lovely board, all chosen for their commitment to our community as well as their commitment to advocating for mental health and our clients. Just a typical client experience, really quick to go over. Typically, a client will receive 6 sessions. During those 6 sessions, they establish 3 treatment plan goals. They attend weekly sessions addressing concerns, working towards goals, and designing an independent continuation plan. Those services can then be extended past the 6 sessions for approximately $10 to $25. This is what we call buy-in. And so that essentially establishes a buy-in for the client to their own care, which we find really improves the success of their overall achievement. We utilize graduate interns. Everybody always asks, how do you do it so cheap? One of the ways is we utilize graduate interns. They're supervised by our licensed clinical director. They also receive training, and all of our administration and the use of the space is provided free by the staff of a Helping Hand Counseling Center. Again, it's a philanthropic arm of our for-profit company. Our partnership with AHHC allows us to use the rooms, and all of our overhead is covered, copiers, paper, anything you name it. It's pretty much provided by the for-profit. From May 2018 to May 22, we've provided approximately 12,000 hours of free crisis counseling. This has totaled over $1 million worth of counseling services that have been provided to Osceola County. And we even have individuals who drive in as far as Davenport, Seminole, and so forth. Our completion rate is approximately 82%. That means that clients have attended all 6 sessions, met 1 treatment goal, and have transitioned to either the scholarship program or felt confident to continue with their continuation plan to meet their remaining goals. These are just a few of the other advocacy programs that we do as an extension of the counseling services we provide. We've partnered with Help Now and the Nicole Montalvo Foundation during Domestic Violence Awareness Month. We also have a project during April, Project Pinwheel, which is actually a national project that goes on. And that's utilized to bring awareness to child abuse prevention. And then our big fundraiser, which we were honored to have you guys as part of, which is our now annual night golf fundraiser. It's an absolute blast. I had a little video, but we were cut on time, so you can go to our website and check that out. It's a great recap of that event. And then the last one is our stocking stuffer drive that we do. We partner with We Dare to Care, and we provide stocking stuffers for the children that they service during their holiday season. We have a monthly newsletter that goes out as well as part of the information branch of our nonprofit. And that includes things like articles, staff introductions. We provide free ebooks. We're always putting out community resources, food drives, medical things, that sort of community resource direction, and then any sort of upcoming groups that we have coming up. Just as a recap, since approximately 2020, according to the National Alliance of Mental Illness, we've seen a 42% increase in anxiety and depression linked directly to the stress of COVID, isolation, all of the things that we all hear in the news, right? So I won't bore you with all of that. But, you know, the unfortunate thing is in our industry, mental health is sort of that thing that everybody kind of talks about, but then kind of doesn't want to think too much about. And so, you know, we really are sort of a one-stop shop. There's really nobody that can come into my office that can't get services, period, regardless of income or any other status. We service everything from teachers, law enforcement, like I mentioned before, just your average family, all the way to somebody who just walks in off the street and doesn't really have any resources. Our goal for next year is to hopefully be able to provide a case manager for those individuals so that we can directly connect them to the community resources versus just sort of putting it on social media and having flyers in the reception area and things like that. So we're continuing to grow, again, with our second location, and we're also growing within our St. Cloud location as well. So thank you very much for your time and for your support.
Thank you.
Okay, Madam Chair, our second informational presentation this afternoon. As you're aware, we recently concluded our annual customer satisfaction survey, and here to present is Tiffany Henderson, Director of Corporate Communications.
Good afternoon. We have with us today Michael Vigent, the CEO of Great Blue Research. Great Blue Research has been conducting our customer satisfaction survey since 2015, and they were commissioned by KUA to conduct a comprehensive research among residential and commercial customers to gain a deeper understanding into their perceptions of the utility and satisfaction with the services provided. The survey was conducted by telephone and online this year in March, and now I will turn it over to Michael.
Great. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you so much for having me. Please note that this presentation has 31 slides. I am not going to go through all of them. Also, please note, I'm just going to take about 7 or 8 minutes and walk you through some of the highlights of what we're looking at and really kind of how we need to be thinking about the story of the data this year. But please know, as you have been told in years past, we're available as needed at no additional cost. So any questions that you have as you dive into this, I'm going to try to give you a very quick overview of the story today. I think most importantly, really in particular, as you look at 19, 20, 21, we saw lots of mid to high 90s in our ratings. The world really changed in 2020, as did the how we collect data. So we're going to talk a little bit about that today, I think is really important. But I'm really going to ask you to take this data for this year and look at it as a new benchmark, okay? Not as a comparison to 2021. I'm going to explain that, but I'm going to ask you to look at it from a benchmark perspective. And why do we do that? Number one, historically, we were capturing all of your data. 19, 20, and 21 were all done via phone only. As COVID hit, people stopped answering the phones. Over the last couple of years in particular, there's lots of technology that prevents us from getting through to landlines. And that's done to prevent spammers, but it's also impacting the phone world. This is a good thing because with the amount of work that you're doing in the technological space, how you're communicating with your customers via text, the online presence that you have, you know, 50% or so of your customers are linked in with you in some way, shape, or form, whether it's Facebook or whatnot. So it has really shifted to a digital model. That allows for your cost to remain stable and in some cases drop, and it allows us to collect more information for you. Now, as you get into the data, what we're going to learn is that 45 to 64 age category, which is, you know, your homeowners and those sorts of things, that number increased in our sample this go around. The number of 18 to 44 year olds dropped a little bit in this sample round. And part of that is you started to see some of these, 20 somethings and even in some cases 30 somethings that were impacted in a negative way by COVID, we're moving back in with mom and dad. So this particular year, the demographic shifted a little bit, but we did get some great response, and you'll see all the numbers that we captured in just a moment here. So we did conduct the survey both in English and Spanish, so folks had the opportunity to do so as they felt most comfortable, and we did conduct it by phone and digital as well. So as we were comparing against the phone only, we did some statistical analysis and did some weighting to make sure that the methodology didn't have a negative impact. So real quickly, you've seen this survey before, so the same types of areas for investigation, your organizational characteristics, and that's really what I'm going to focus on mostly today. Satisfaction with customer service, your satisfaction with service is still very high. Perception of contact resolution, an important one there, doing very well there, but we're going to talk to you about why that matters. Corporate culture, satisfaction with phone, mobile billing, online chat functions, likelihood to participate in renewable energy initiatives, and then demographic profile of respondents. So there's a larger report that exists that has all of the demographics in it, but we wanted to trim it down for you for this purpose.
Can I ask you?
Yes, ma'am.
Some people were sent digital and some people were called, or
correct,
both things happened to every person?
Nope. We sent out the email to a random sampling of your customers via email, and then we also did a random sampling of phone as well. Okay. What we saw in just kind of touching on some of the digital methodology here for a quick second, we saw the 55 plus were more engaged in 22 compared to 21. So we saw greater engagement. Folks, tell us a bit more in that online methodology, and it really took kind of a COVID to make that shift happen. So we're real happy with that. And you're going to see we also got a lot more surveys within the same price point. So our margin for error dropped as well. So happy to talk about this all day long, but let's dive in. We had a little over 1,200 completed responses on the residential side. And those were 200 by phone, 1,033 online. We conducted these surveys March 1st to 25th. And as I always mention, these are snapshots in time. So there's a lot going on in the news about gas prices, inflation, a potential stock market crash, and all these different things. So we always want to keep in mind what's going on when we're collecting this data. On the commercial side, we also completed 100 surveys, even 50-50 split phone and online, same time frame. That margin's fair is a little higher. You have less businesses, and so therefore we collect less data from them compared to residents. But it's still a strong sample size and allows us to really understand what's going on. So why do I say let's make this a new benchmark? As you get into digital methodologies, you start to get a different expectation set from your audience. When you're talking to folks digitally, they have more of a digital expectation set. As I explained earlier, we captured a lot more folks in that 45 to 64. We're capturing a better representation of customers than we have in the past. And because we're not just doing phone only, which has a history of capturing more of your older respondents, more of your long-tenured customers who have a tendency to be just a little happier with you, we're seeing these kinds of shifts. And you're not going to hear me use the word declines, even though it says it in the title. We have to speak to the data, but this is really a new benchmark. And as we get into, and the reason being is because we're capturing more information from more people in a wider variety of demographic profiles. Okay, we ultimately want to see results in the mid to high 80s and low 90s, but they're really, again, because of a methodology shift, we saw those changes. So these become the new benchmarks, is my recommendation. But we're going to explain to you, even as, and in each of these, there's ultimately 13 characteristics that we measured. These were the residential customers. We also saw a lot more don't knows. Now, in these particular cases, we removed the don't knows, but this wasn't a case of you had more folks increasing in negativity. You had more folks who didn't know enough to provide a rating. And how does that happen? Why does that happen? Well, because during COVID, we all went home. Many of us went home to work at home, and we started getting bombarded digitally with emails and phone calls and all that sort of stuff digitally for our jobs. Therefore, the prioritization of understanding what's going on with the companies that we're doing business with was lower down on the spectrum. My wife, for example, is a teacher, was teaching kids from home with my own two kids at home. Reading up on our utility was last on her list. So that's why, again, so much has changed. That's why I'm really encouraging that these are new benchmarks. But when you get into, for example, having knowledgeable employees, having courteous employees, overall satisfaction with KUA, you're in those mid to high 80s where we'd like to see you. Now, how does that compare? And so we really break it down so you can see the differences between phone and online. Phone folks are just giving higher ratings than those are online. Again, it doesn't mean greater negativity. It just means different expectations. So we break it out for you and show you the comparison phone versus online. This is the most important piece, I think, in this. As you look at KUA from a residential standpoint, and as you may be aware, Great Blue conducts the public power data source in conjunction with APPA, and that is where we speak to 12,000 municipal power customers across the United States. This shows you the 2021, these same characteristics for Florida PPDS subscribers as well as national PPDS subscribers, and you can see you're 10 to 20 points higher than all of those. And a lot of that has to do with the technology that you have included, and we're going to see some of that in just a moment. So I'll jump over this. This is on the commercial side. Okay, so very similar story. I'm not going to read through each of the characteristics because I know you have a long agenda today, so I want to make sure that I'm mindful. But again, as we get into those customer service needs, you're taking care of those customers, protecting the environment and concern for customer needs. These are higher concerns, and folks want to know a little bit more about it. And then again, we break it down phone versus online for you. So now we're talking about office personnel. And so here are the primary reasons why they're contacting you, paying a bill, activating service, question on a bill that is not a complaint. And as you can see pretty clearly, 92% of folks that had or were serviced by a KUA employee provided 82.6, a very satisfied rating, 8.9 on the somewhat satisfied for a combined total of 91.5%. That is high levels of service. Your team and the customer service side should be applauded. They're doing a great job there. First contact resolution is probably the most important question that we're asking in utility research these days. And it means that when I'm calling you and I'm interacting with you, I'm getting that interaction solved on the first contact. Now, not every contact can be resolved on the first contact. And so it's about having clear communication with folks, letting them know, here's what the process is going to look like. There may be two or three steps in the process, but here's how it's going to work. When you have satisfaction resolved on the first contact, 93.3% is the overall satisfaction rating. Multiple issues or multiple contacts, we see a 55% rating, and then varied number of contacts, 46.4%. So again, that first contact resolution, you're doing a nice job there, but we really, on the second and multiples or varies, we want to communicate a little bit more why that's going to happen, set that expectation, then folks become okay with it. This is where we're now starting to see some of the benefits of this digital communication, this digital relationship you have with your customers. Have you ever reported an outage by text to KUA? We saw about 16% said yes, they had. When they did, about 93% providing a very or somewhat satisfied. So that text relationship is working very well. We see it as well. Have they received any notifications on power outages and restoration? We saw about 31.4% said yes. And again, 99.5% satisfied with that interaction. So what's challenging in public power right now is you have made a living for years and years and years providing great service person to person. The expectation level is changing in the customer service world. More folks want to self-service. They want to handle things on their own through your portals, through text, through chats. So they desire less to talk to people. Again, another reason why viewing these as new ratings, new benchmarks, as opposed to declines is another reason for that. Interest in being or using an online portal, we see about 75% there, somewhat or very interested. Importance of the Good Neighbor Fund, and you just saw an example with the previous presentation why those sorts of things are important. So we're seeing 79% importance on the Good Neighbor Fund. Awareness of KUA's free community events, again, 50 or so percent. You don't have a McDonald's advertising budget to let everyone know what you're doing every month. So 50% from an awareness standpoint is actually pretty good. But it's easy to look at the not all aware and say, well, geez, there's another 50% that don't know what we're doing. This is both busy lives, people going through some tough times, as well as they may just not be interested in the community event. So it's not necessarily a bad thing. Last couple of slides here. One half of folks that we spoke to reporting to not be aware of the community solar program. But listen, as we talked about some of those price issues that are going on with gas prices and some of the other things, this is another great time to remind them the value of the solar and how that can help overall. But when we talk about the importance of the community solar programs, it's very clear folks see the importance of it. So it's just that reminder. Again, there's been a lot of competing information in terms of our worlds and our lives since COVID started. So this is where some of this starts to pop in. And I'll jump right to the kind of the last slide here. Again, this is just a reminder that we switched that methodology. Wanted to make sure that we were very clear what we did, how we did it. If you have any questions, we're happy to answer those. And so really, I think that the key thing here is continue to promote all the good things that you're doing in the environment for your energy efficiency initiatives, all the different things. And a lot of this is just increasing awareness, continuing to share the message because folks stopped paying attention to things over the last 2 years. So there's no real broke items here to fix. It's really more just reminding folks of all the great things that you're doing. particular community events, we do see a strong correlation between overall satisfaction and how folks view you as being a good community partner. So when you're a good community partner, your ratings go up. Okay? And then last but not least, just once again, based on all the financial stuff that's going out there, reminding folks of the benefits of community solar and what can be done there. So I've tried to go through a lot of information and give you a high-level story in as short a period of time to be mindful of your time, but I will jump on calls and emails anytime you need us to answer any specific questions, but I'll also take any questions that you may have at this time. Thank you very much for your continued business. We appreciate you.
Thank you. Got a question?
Go ahead, Manny.
A quick question. Does the questions, do they have a component of a why? Someone answers negative, it's a negative response. And did you capture that information on paper?
There are some open-ended questions to get to that information. I'm happy to pass those along. They're in that larger report, but I can also send along any of that information in its own separate question. Here's the response to, for example, question number 42 or whatever the case may be. So, yes, that information is available, and I can easily have that sent along to you.
That was kind of my question as well. But I'm kind of surprised that people will not say the same thing over the phone that versus online when they have a little more time to explain their thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And for the, I would have expected the opposite, that the rating will increase online, even though people are more honest without talking on the phone and whatever. That logic doesn't sink in with me. I will believe that people would be more open to give their honest opinion and normally would be positive.
There's a couple of things there. So when you're on the phone, there's a time component. So the more information you're giving me on the phone and talking through it is increasing the length of that survey. So folks are mindful of the time. That's one component of it. Two, there's the politeness factor. I don't want to be as in-depth when I'm on the phone with you because I'm speaking to a person. I'm more likely to be a little bit more critical when I can type it and there's no interaction from a personal standpoint. But then I can also type, I can think about it. If I want to come back to that survey, I can. So I think folks are just a little bit more critical in a good way. They're explaining expectations in a deeper way versus the more answers I give you on the phone, the longer this phone call becomes. So there's a little bit of that component to it. But we are seeing this story, this message, 7 to 9 points difference from phone to online across the country. So this is not a KUA unique thing. This is across the country we're seeing this.
Yeah, there's a couple questions in the survey that surprised me that it would be more negative than than over the phone.
Yeah, and it's not always negative, too. In some cases, as you look into the data, there's a number of different questions where there's big numbers of don't knows. And so it's not so much when you're looking at the negatives, there's not a lot of negativity in any of the ratings. It's either I know enough about it, so I'm providing you with a positive rating. I don't know enough about it, so I'm just saying don't know. And then ultimately that lowers your overall positive rating. So, and that's why I really wanted to communicate. And so I was thankful that Tiffany and others invited me to come in person because it's easier to explain some of this stuff when we're sitting here. And as you have questions, if any other questions pop up after today, don't hesitate to give me a call. Myself and my team will walk you through any questions you have.
Ray, you have questions? No. Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate all of your time and I appreciate your business. Have a great day.
Sorry, you have questions? No? Ginny, if you have questions,
no,
he's still here.
But you didn't ask over here.
sorry. And you, Mayor, I'm sorry. You have
no,
any questions?
That's fine, no.
Attended Dominic.
Hey, Madam Chair. We've got one item under new business this afternoon, conveyance of surplus property to High Tide Manufacturing Group, and our general counsel, Mr. Grant Lassert, is going to tell us more about it.
Thank you, Mr. Horton. Good evening, Madam Chair, board members. If we could go to the next slide. Excellent. What you see on the right is a piece of the large parcel of property that we purchased in 1987 to construct the Lackey Center, the original garage and the warehouse and the training yard, the pole training yard where our linemen climb poles and practice all their critical tasks here on site. This parcel is next to that. It's 0.66 acres, and it's part of the entire 12.5 acres we purchased in 1987. This parcel, and it's the photo on the right, is no longer needed for our operations. It's no longer useful to us, and it therefore becomes surplus property for KUA. Now, if you look on the left, the picture on the left, in the white box, that's what's in the picture on the right. That's the 0.66 acres that we no longer need for KUA operations. Right next to that property, going out to John Young, and there's an arrow pointing to it, is the company formerly called Custom Plastics. It's now called High Tide Manufacturing Group, HMG for short. That's a business that manufactures products right next to that parcel. And HMG, the owner, has expressed interest in purchasing our surplus property in the white box. Their business is booming. They're expanding. They need to expand their operations. They'd like to do it at the site itself. And that expansion will include enlarging the complex and adding more employees at high-level wages. This is something that would be very helpful to the city of Kissimmee's efforts to promote economic development in the community, which they've really been spearheading for the past number of years. Staff considered putting this surplus parcel out for competitive bids, all comers, but we realized that wouldn't work because the property is landlocked. It's landlocked, and if a third party purchased it, they would require the use of Lowenstein Way. That's the service road right next to this building right here, and they would require an easement. That would be very operationally disruptive to us. We have bucket trucks that come out of the Davis Center over here and use Lowenstein Way to come out to Carroll Street. We have field service trucks that do that. We have Davy Tree Trimming, our tree trimming trucks. They use this area. And that would all be competing with KUA customers and KUA employees. So we realize that the only way to really dispose of this property would be to sell it to the adjoining property owner that's interested. We had an independent appraisal done on the property. They came out with a price of $151,000. HMG has said that they're good with paying that price. They're also willing to pay the costs of getting this sale approved by the city of Kissimmee. Because of the type of property, the amount of property, and the fact that we're taking off a piece of what's the existing KUA parcel, that requires a subdivision plat application. And HMG has expressed their willingness to absorb the cost of that. That goes through two City of Kissimmee committees and then the City Commission itself. So we feel staff is recommending approval of the purchase pursuant to resolution because we feel it's in the best interest of our ratepayers. First, we would receive market value for the property, as has been expressed in the independent appraisal. And second, we would be helping our excellent neighbor and employer expand their existing operations and bring more high-paying jobs to the city. I would point out that Belinda Kierkegaard, our excellent head of economic development for the city of Kissimmee, is here in the audience expressing her support for these efforts. And I stand for any questions. Yes.
Did KUA seek them out or did they seek KUA out?
I would say that they were very interested in the surplus property, so they sought us out.
Why do we call it surplus? I have never heard that term for properties.
Because we're not using it. We're not using it. Right, exactly. If we needed to put a facility there or what have you, then it would be it wouldn't be surplus. We would be using it.
It would have a purpose.
Yes, exactly. Yes, sir.
Would they put up a fence or a barrier, or is there already one there?
They would have to move the existing, if the purchase went through, if the board approved it, and by the way, the resolution calls for us to negotiate a real estate purchase contract and then go through the process. once that's done and they acquire the property, they would have to move the fence up to the new boundary.
The new property line.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
go to the recommendation.
I understand.
Sure. Let me go to the recommendation. I'm sorry. There we go. So staff recommends adoption of resolution number 22-02, authorizing one, the sale of the surplus parcel to High Tide Manufacturing Group for a price of $151,000, plus applicable costs on terms and conditions favorable to KUA. Number two, it authorizes staff to take any and all necessary actions to see the sale of the surplus parcel to finalization. And three, the chair and the secretary to execute deeds and similar real estate instruments to consummate sale of the surplus property. That will be coming later.
Do I hear a motion?
So moved.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any against it?
Nay.
Hearing no nays, I guess the motion is approved.
Thank you very much.
So we go on to K.
Staff reports.
Staff reports.
Yes, Madam Chair. Two items under staff reports this afternoon. The first item, you're all aware that we recently performed our disaster drill day, as we do annually each year. And here to present the results is Mr. Jeff Gray, Vice President, IT.
Hello, Board. I'm going to jump right in with all of the fun things that we did during drill day. It was a very busy drill. Probably one of the best drills we've ever had, and I'll tell you why and how in just a quick second. First, there's going to be a report coming to you. This is a voluminous report, I believe. It's almost, at last count, it was about 150 pages, so it's very detailed drilling, if you can imagine that much. That includes some pictures, of course. Like I said, a very busy drill, a very involved drill, and you'll see the pre-drill communications. These are the messages we send to employees prior to the drill start, which simulates what they would see right before a hurricane. Things about, you know, the hurricane's getting stronger, it's heading this way, it's heading that way, the checklists that fire off, the steps that occur before a hurricane, all of that is graded by the evaluators as that is taking place. And then the evaluators themselves start coming up with, we have our little secret meetings where we plan all the things we're going to do and all the things we're going to break and how we're going to organize that during the drill period. It's very war games-like, which is, makes it a little bit fun, but also gets everybody sort of in the spirit of preparing for, you know, the real thing. And then there's follow-up items. This year we had a record number of follow-up items. That's a good thing, not a bad thing. We want to find things that break and don't work as expected during a drill, because better in the drill than in the real world, right? But a lot of the items were not broken things. They were, hey, what if we tried this? Ideas, suggestions, and you know, optimizations. Fantastic. We love that, because every one of those items means maybe getting the lights on a little quicker or a better service to our customers at a time when they're very sensitive to their electricity when it goes out during a storm. And, of course, as I mentioned, some great photos. And I'll share some of those with you in the presentation. Again, most involved drill on record. I've been doing this since 2000, so this is my 21st DDD. And we started them back in 1998 when there were tornadoes. And we realized that KUA back then could improve on its response game. And we've been doing that ever since. And again, the recommendations are coming to you. So a lot of it you'll see in the written report. These are just the highlights today. We began, this is just a quick shot to let our customers know the moment they walked in our lobby that KUA is a drill-in today, so ignore those alerts and things that might go off while you're here. We don't want to shock the customer. But a lot of the customers actually, usually when they see that, they appreciate that. They're very like, oh, that's what you should do. That's good. You know, so they're happy to see it. But we do alert them as much as we can when they come into the lobby, because who knows what scenario might be about to happen. Some of the things we did with the executive office, it was new. We have a new group texting feature, which we're working on. You'll see a screenshot of that in a moment, where we can have a much more improved communication with staff through texting that is optimized for group communication. Typically, if you're on a group chat with everybody, you know, it's everybody's phone number or their name, and it's kind of, you have to scroll up and down a lot to keep track of the flow. This makes that a lot easier and also gives us a better way to track things like for public record purposes, when did this happen, who said what, where were we at that time, and it's all on a computer versus someone's phone or multiple phones. So it gives us sort of a command center of sorts. And so we tried that in multiple departments. You'll see this come up again and again. But the executive team, obviously communication is critical for us to make sure we know who's on top of what. And in this case, we had Brian as if Brian was not available. So who then takes over and we execute that executive succession plan as part of the drill. Corporate communications, very busy. Tiffany and Adriana did a great job. The social media work, of course, that goes without saying. We're going to be posting things on Facebook and Twitter and so forth. We did some mock press releases. We also did a real press release about the drill. They updated their media contacts. They had a mock press conference, which I think they did actually in English and Spanish, and sort of filmed it right up here as if they were doing it for the press and any other community members who would attend. And they also participated in a cyber event from IT where we were playing out the scenario that we've been hacked and now we have to tell the public. So what happens then, right? What, not just about what we do in the technical world, but how do we communicate that to people outside and let them know how bad it is or that it's nothing to worry about and so forth. And other reporting you'll see where that trickled out into other departments later on in the presentation. Human resources, a lot done in human resources. They, of course, the safety is a big part of that that division. So what you're seeing here is, of course, people, we don't really like a whole lot of tabletops in the drill. Some people think that's what the drills are. They're not. They're all live action, and you don't get to simulate hardly anything. If you say, what would you do if there was a trash can fire? Well, I'd get the fire extinguisher. Okay, go get it. Show me where it is. And now you have to go find the fire extinguisher. And you think you know, but under the, you know, with the adrenaline rush, you actually walk past two of them sometimes before you find one. So we play that out, whether it's first aid, fire, or any kind of electrical emergency and so forth in the operational side. They have to live it. They have to go and do it. And that's where we find what doesn't work or what could be done better, which is, again, the purpose of the drill. So a lot of great work done by human resources in that. They did a vehicle accident. What do you do during an accident? There are actually a lot of steps if you're driving a company vehicle that you have to be cognizant of. And they went through that, which actually went quite well. You'll see that in the documentation. We also tested the manpower pool. This is where we have a task that comes up. In this case, they simulated that the pond out front is flooding. The water's rising. It looks like water's going to come in the front door. We need some people to do some sandbags and to help with water management and so forth. Let's get some people. Who's available? And that manpower pool then kicks in to say who is not literally on a task right now, and we'll get them to come down and do it. So they trigger that. And every department has to keep track of their people during the hurricanes and keep track of who's available, who's not. So that's a great test. Finance administration, a lot of great things going. Of course, the meals that they serve the crews, this is a really important part of our drilling. This is them setting up. You can see some more pictures in just a moment I'll have pop up. But this is them going to work, setting it up to feed the crews and get everybody out and into the fields for a long day of work. So we load tested that with both not just our staff, but also the vendor who comes in to bring the food. Can they provide? Can they deliver? It's one thing to sign a contract. It's another to show up with a couple hundred meals. So they test that. We also test the generators, our UPS power supplies. They simulated things like a fuel pump failing. What do you do when your fuel pump doesn't work and you've got tons of trucks that need fuel? Well, you have to come up with something, and they did that. Emergency procurement, which is where we maybe raise the limits on certain credit cards so they can buy emergency supplies. That all has to be done ahead of time. And inventory of the substations, not just our main storage facilities. So great stuff here. Some better pictures of that. You can see the very nice display for the food. This is an actual generator being fired off in that middle picture there, and that's them actually using a manual pump for the fuel so we can get fuel into the vehicles. Again, you don't see a tabletop here. You see people actually doing the things, and that's what you want to look for is, did they actually do it? Did they try it? Customer service, also very busy. We had the FEMA forms out this time where the employees who would normally be filling out this paperwork had to actually take a look at what's going to be expected of them during a hurricane. And y'all have heard plenty about FEMA over the years. That paperwork is really important, and it's going to be more accurate in the moment than it will be 2 or 3 weeks after you're exhausted from hurricane recovery. So they built that right into the drill, which I thought was great. What do you do when an EV charger fails? Let's take a look at that scenario, like as a drill item. Why is that on there? when the power is out and you have an electric vehicle in your home and it didn't charge overnight because of the power outage, your last gasp might be to get to a charger so that you can continue your day and solve the problems at hand. That charger, if it's offline, that's going to be a problem for our customers as well. So we played that into the scenario, worked through it. It was went really well. There's Scott Greaves, our genius of all things power, out there resetting one. Tested the group texting, as I mentioned. Mock calls, where people pretend to be customers calling in. You had a question?
I do have a question. Do our customers know where these vehicle charging stations are?
They're about to. We're actually working on something right now to put a map out.
If they don't know where to go, it's not going to do any good.
Yeah, that's a great question. And we want to do more than just give customers, like, here's a map of where they are. What I'm working on right now with several other people here is a way to make sure that it's up and it's running, because you can get to one of these things and it's actually broken. And anybody's got an electric vehicle knows how that goes. That's like getting to a gas station and saying they're out of fuel. It's the same problem. And you may have spent that last bit to get there. So let's not send anybody on, you know, a fool's errand, as they would call it, to go to the wrong charger. So we're going to see if we can deploy in a very short amount of time a map with all of the power that we're running, that we manage, and also letting you know, is it available or not, is it running or not, that kind of thing. And then of course they can get directions to it right from their phone.
And all of our customers get this, right? Because we don't know who has a
right. It'll be on the website vehicle. It's just available for them to try it out. Yeah. Now the vehicles, some vehicles have these things built in and services built in. I'm sure Tesla has a way to find the Tesla chargers, but that's not all the chargers. And we will only be responsible, I think, on the site for what we control, because we won't have access to all the other portals and things like that. But great question, and already a work in progress, which I'm happy to report. On outage entry, we, of course, have the reps on the phones with these mock calls actually putting outages into the system. Now, again, this is assuming things like, as you see, AMI is out. What if AMI is broken? We rely on it. We do every day. We're using AMI. But if it's down, we're going to be back to old school, so we have to, of course, drill that as well. And the alt site ops that you see, that's where the reps have to go. This building's destroyed, damaged, in some way uninhabitable. You have to go to the alternate site, which is Meridia, and run customer service from over there, and you'll see some images there. The left-hand side is them working here in our plush building, and on the not-so-plush building on the far right, that's them working over at Meridia. But as you can see, they're working it out. They've got their laptop in hand. They sit down. They put in their headset, and they're taking calls and entering them right into the system, okay? Not as fancy digs, but it gets the job done in a hurricane. In the middle, you'll see an example of this text thing I've been telling you about. You see how optimized the layout is. It's not a bunch of phone numbers and who is who. It just shows you when someone says, is anybody available for a quick task, and people can chime in quick, and you know who said it. I can do it, I'm not available, whatever, and we can see really quick like that. Now imagine that the person asking that is sitting at a computer with multiple things that they're managing, able to see all that and communicate with the field. We can do this in two ways. One way is I ask a question and everybody answers back to me, and the other way is I ask a question and everybody sees those answers, so we have a choice. So in a cyber incident, for example, I would probably want everybody to see the answers and not have it all just go to one person, because one answer might change the activities of the others. If they know that this is not the problem, they won't focus on it, they'll go somewhere else. So that there's two ways to do this, and again, this is a very new service. We just started using it about a month ago, but we think it has tremendous potential. Moving on to IT, a lot of what I do in IT for the drill is cybersecurity and failover and things that, honestly, I cannot really present in a public meeting. You won't see it in the final report. All of that is kept separate for obvious reasons, because we don't want to show the hackers how we do things or give a how-to. And also the same is true for our drill, for the hostile event drill. If somebody walks in with a gun and wants to start shooting, we're not going to share in a public document what our procedures are. But we tested that, and it went really well. And we got some great suggestions as well out of that same drill. I think everything else I've already covered is moving on. Operations, great job both for the primary operations and also at Kane. This is, of course, one of the shots of the guys doing a hurt man rescue. This is the one you typically see a lot at the lineman rodeos. They also did a load shed event, and in events where you have something that's causing power in it to be greater than we can handle, there's going to be a load shed of some kind. How do we do that? They actually drilled that. It was great. The damage assessment was really a big piece. When you go out right after the storm, before you can start reconnecting anything, you have to say, well, how bad is it, right? And that's a big part of our recovery process. So they looked at that. The Lifeline alarm, this is in a situation where maybe we've sent someone out to a substation. They should have called back by now, and they haven't. And we have to play out the, okay, what do you do? Who do you send? How long until you call 911? You got somebody who may be injured. The likelihood of that is much higher after a hurricane because of debris. You got a debris in a substation where you would normally walk in and go and do something simple. Now there's a problem because there's a tree down, and maybe the situation isn't safe. So they drilled that right to the point where I think it was the dispatcher was about ready to call 911, and they said, okay, we can stop there. So they did everything great. So that went really well. Again, the Hurt Man Rescue. And then let's take a look at Kane Island. I got some great photos there. They always, if there was an award for DDD, they would get it last year and this year. So they did a lube oil fire. This is where the lubricant oil has actually in some way gotten sprayed onto a turbine, and it's on fire. So what do you do? And I mean, they drilled this. It was beautiful. When you read it, you'll see why I got so excited about it. So that's our crews working with the fire department, learning how to operate the hoses and so forth. But sometimes you can't use water. You have to use something else for fuel fires, as you probably know. So they went through all of that, and they broke a lot of things where they were like, I would just do this. Okay, that's not working today. So now what? And so it was a great drill, live action, excellent. And I really appreciate their enthusiasm and creativity when they went through this. And happy to say that you're going to get a report with all of this in it soon, as soon as we get done reviewing everything and polishing it up for you. But other than that, overall, we are ready for hurricane season. And that's the end of my report. If you have any questions.
Great report.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a question. Sorry, Jeff. The group texting, how intuitive is that? Is that sent out to every member on property, every staff member on property? Is it divided by department? How does that work?
We predefine the list, so we kind of have a known group that we can send it to. We can do an ad hoc where we just add everybody manually, which is not the most optimal because maybe in the fray we don't have time, but what's their number? What's their number? You would just start looking on your phone. But what we're experimenting with now is having groups predefined, ready to go, and then from there it can just be activated quite quickly.
Is there like a separate like executive for all your department?
Right, exactly.
That,
yeah. Uh-huh. We got, I think it was 5 different groups to start with. And within minutes of looking at that, we're like, we're going to need more of these because the use case is quite broad, obviously, for customer service versus executive or IT. So, and I said, we're going to probably use this a lot. This is really cool.
Is there one for the board, like for live updates, say in a real disaster? So maybe like, if we're home, we can get live updates, you know, of how things are progressing in a real disaster.
I have to be really careful with that because if you start communicating with each other, yeah.
You'd be getting them from me.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. We can set something up, but yeah, I have to be careful with deploying anything that says you can now communicate with each other outside the sunshine and now we've created.
Well, maybe not for us to reply, but at least a live update of what's going on.
Yeah, that would be something that would come from Brian.
You'd get it from me.
Okay.
Right, do you have a question?
No, I'm good.
Good. Any other questions?
No.
Okay.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks.
Hey, Madam Chair, second item on under staff reports is our corporate communications semi-annual report. Ms. Tiffany.
Good afternoon again. I'm here to present the corporate communications semi-annual. And I want to spend some time talking about our strategic goal for this year, which is targeting offline audiences with quarterly scam awareness messaging. And we wanted to make sure that we were really targeting all of our customers, not just those on Facebook and Nextdoor and on our website. We wanted to make sure we were targeting all demographics and moving to things like radio ads, in-person presentations, newspaper ads. And we've already been promoting our scam awareness on our KUA bill ads that you might have seen. I also wanted to let you hear some of the radio ads that actually aired on 2 different radio stations in our area in the first quarter. The first one is an English ad that aired on WFLF 540 AM, and they broadcast in Orange, Osceola, Seminole. Perfect for perhaps someone who might live in Osceola County but then is driving to work in Orange County, they'll still be able to hear that radio ad. So here's the English ad.
Yeah. I'm from the Kissimmee Utility Authority. You need to immediately pay or we will disconnect your...
Stop. This is a scam. It's hard to determine what's real and what's not. So the Kissimmee Utility Authority wants to share some tips. We never call to intimidate you or threaten to disconnect. We never require you to pay with a prepaid debit card or ask you to pay immediately. If you're uncertain if someone is from KUA, call us at 407-933-9800. Don't be a victim of a scam.
So just a quick 30-second commercial warning people about some of the warning signs and what KUA will do when we call you, which is not ask for your personal information. Also, WRSO, which is a lower frequency station that just targets Osceola County, a Spanish-speaking station. Also, we aired an ad on that station.
Soy de Kissimmee Utility Authority. Debe pagar de inmediato o desconectaremos.
Esto es un fraude. Es difícil determinar qué es real y qué no, por lo que Kissimmee Utility Authority quiere compartir algunos consejos. Nunca llaman para intimidarlo o amenazarlo con desconectarlo. Nunca le solicitan que pague con una tarjeta de débito prepagada ni te solicitan pagar inmediatamente. Si no estás seguro si alguien es de KUA, llame al 407-933-98. No sea víctima de una estafa.
So that was basically the same ad, 30 seconds in Spanish. And here's a breakdown of the audience that those commercials, the listeners that heard those commercials. For WFLF, so basically what this means is around 110,000 people heard that commercial on average about two times. It aired throughout the month of March. The median age of the person listening to that commercial was about 53. And then the highest demographic that we saw that heard that commercial was from ages 45 to 54. And then if we move to the Spanish ad, about 50,000 people heard that Spanish commercial on average about three times during that campaign. And if you look at the age composition, this is really the demographic that we're trying to target, 65 and older. The median age of a person hearing that commercial was 69. So really great feedback from the station to show this is the demographic that we're trying to reach.
And I don't think, but we haven't had anyone fall victim of a scam in how long?
So the last 2 months, we've had reports, but nobody's paid, and we only had one in February, so that was pretty good.
And then we're also beginning our presentations this quarter, second quarter scam presentations. We presented at the Osceola Council on Aging Senior Congregate Dining Club. We talked to them about the different types of scams, the warning signs, what to do if you encounter someone suspicious. And then we played a recap game where they were able to get some prizes. And really the most meaningful part of this presentation was all of the questions that we received from the seniors afterwards. And we kind of got a front row seat to some of the things that they encounter, not just from KUA, but from other, you know, scam-related agencies that are contacting them. And it was a great way to just give general information about never give out your personal information over the phone. If we do call you, we will already have your information, so there's no reason to ask for that. We're also scheduled to speak at the Good Samaritan Kissimmee Village on June 15th, and we will be talking to about 200 seniors there, giving them that same presentation about scam awareness and the warning signs. Moving along to our events, I wanted to just recap how our movie in the park wrapped up on March 4th with Encanto. As you can see from that picture, we are now seeing towards the end the pre-pandemic crowds that we're used to. There was about 3,500 people. We had more than 1,500 waivers signed for kids participating in the Kid Zone. which is significantly greater than the 400 waivers that we had in October when we first started. So we're glad to see people back coming to the movie and enjoying themselves. We also saw increased engagement leading up to the movie on the Facebook post, lots of comments and shares as well. Some of the recent events that we participated in was the inaugural Earth Day cleanup, Tidy Up Toho. This was a joint event with the county, Toho Water, the city of Kissimmee, Osceola County Library, and the Extension Services. It was a cleanup of Lake Toho on kayaks and also around the grounds of the Lakefront Park. And nearly 300 pounds of trash was collected from Lake Toho and Kissimmee Lakefront Park. So a great event, our first time participating in the event because it was the first time it was held, and we plan to continue participating in that event. And then also Cowtown, as always, we had snow cones and crafts and inflatables there. And this is our upcoming events. The Juneteenth celebration on June 18th we'll be participating in. This will be our first time at Juneteenth. It moved to Kissimmee Lakefront Park in 2020. That was the first time it was at the park. Before that, it was at Chambers Park. So last year we didn't participate because we hadn't resumed our events yet, but now we're happy to also offer the Kid Zone at that event. And then, of course, our monumental 4th of July celebration that we're always at on 4th of July. And that's it. I'll take any questions if anyone has any.
Questions?
Thank you. Good job. I do. The radio channels, are you guys considering using other channels as well, other than just AM in English, something more FM?
Yes. So the WRSO was also 97.9 FM, and some of them have dual AM and FM. But yeah, we're open to all. You know, these were iHeartRadio stations, and then there's other vendors owned by Cox radio stations.
Right.
So we can
7.
Yeah, yeah. So we can, you know, we can pick and choose based on the demographic that we're looking to target.
Talking about radio, what about PSA ads on television?
That's also another option. You know, television advertising is a little bit more pricey, but that's also an option under our advertising that we can, you know, we can record a little commercial, a 15-second or 30-second commercial.
Would that be considered PSA? Public service announcement?
It could be, but because it would probably be just considered advertising.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about platforms like Pandora and Spotify where they play ads?
So the radio station, they also have a streaming component. So we didn't do streaming for this one because, again, that is an additional cost. But you can, they do work with the iHeartRadio and Cox to also play those radios on Pandora and Spotify as well. So that would already be built in with some of our vendors.
I'm just so full of questions. When you talk about, you said it cost, but I didn't hear anything about cost. Is there what kind of cost are we looking at? And, maybe we should allocate more to be more successful in who we reach.
Yeah, so for the ad that you heard, a 30-second ad, it's probably about $1,000. And
once?
No. So that ad played about 31 times in the month of March. And so, yes, that's something during our budgeting that we can decide if we want to invest more in advertising, that we can definitely do that.
Yeah, I agree, because even the streaming platforms, like my parents, you know, they listen to Pandora and all that, and they don't have the ad-free version. Mm-hmm. And even in the hospitals, when I work in the hospitals and the teams are playing music on Pandora or whatever, you know, I hear local ads from other hospitals, competing hospitals like St. Cloud and all that. So I think that would be something we can look at in the future.
Yeah, we could definitely look into that.
Depending on how large we want to be, because then you start growing.
Yeah. TV and online is something that we can definitely look at.
Right.
Have you thought about considering partnering with like Toho Water, since they're another utility that's local, mm-hmm. and maybe sharing the cost and getting the word out? Maybe mm-hmm. you could do more that way.
Yeah. That's a great thought, because they, yeah, we know that utilities, you know, it's not just us that's dealing with these problems. So, yeah, that's a great point.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I guess we're now going to hearing the attorney.
Attorney doesn't have anything
to do General Manager?
Just a reminder, next month, June 8th, we'll be having our Day of Giving here at the complex, along with Leaders Luncheon that day. And then I look forward to spending some time with you all that are going to the National Conference in Nashville. Other than that, thank you.
Thank you. Directors, Manny?
No, thank you.
Jeannie?
No, I'm just glad to be back.
Glad to have you back.
Nice to see you. Ray?
Yes. If everybody was listening out there in the field, you heard that KUA got an award from the APPA for their reliability. Well, we need to congratulate the people that actually helped us get that award, and that is you out in the field that work. Thank you for your efforts and for following protocol.
Thank you.
Nothing for me. Good to see everyone.
Mayor?
I just want to wish all the mothers a happy Mother's Day. That's all I have.
Thank you as well.
Thank you.
And from me, just a big thank you. A wonderful month. Good results. And I have a few questions and comments on the survey, but we'll keep them for next month. Thank you. Meeting is adjourned.